social care system. Hear. Thank you, Philip. Coming up, I want to talk about married priests. There are rumours that it might happen. Catholic priests, I'm talking about, in Brazil, just Brazil for now. It has a population of 140 million, Brazil, and it's deemed to need 100,000 priests to serve that population, which is mainly Catholic, but it has fewer than 2,000. Now, the statistics in the UK clearly are very different, but it is a similar picture of a shrinking priesthood and the dangers of a shrinking church. Is this allowing married priests, is it the transformation the church needs or a threat to its future? Hello, good afternoon to you. I want to talk about reports that Pope Francis may soon fulfil the long-held wish, really, of Brazilian bishops, a special request to allow married priests to resume their priestly ministry, to go back to their churches, go back to their flocks and continue to practice life as a priest, even though they had left and got married. Now, I've often thought, even though this is about the Catholic Church, if you're not interested in Catholicism or you're not a Catholic or a person of any faith, I think there's still an interesting conversation to be had here about what priesthood means or can mean or should mean, and the role of women in not the priesthood per se, but in the life of the church, of any church, of any faith. Because there is this long-held tradition in Catholicism for priests not to be married, as you know. And there are many people who believe, I'm one of them, who believe that that should change, and that priests, if they wish to, should be allowed to marry. There are many who won't, just as there are ordinary men who aren't priests who choose not to marry. So it's not a question of they must or they should, or it's better or it's worse if they do or they don't. I just believe it should be open to them on the first ground, just for human reasons. But the reality of the European Church, Catholic Church, is that it's in some senses floundering. It's floundering in numbers of people paying attention to it. It's floundering in numbers of people joining religious orders and the priesthood. So this possibility that it will happen in Brazil is really interesting to me, because if it's expanded out to other places, it's a big if, and these are just reports so far, but if it's expanded out to other places, there will be many within the church who think that married priests are a bad idea, that it goes too far away from the tradition of this huge and important global church. Do you believe married priests would be the transformation the Catholic Church needs, or a threat to its very future? 0345 6060973 is the number. You can text 84850 or tweet at LBC, and I'd love your thoughts as well, just generally on why there is this discomfort with women being married to priests, with women, separate to women having a role as a priest. I want to keep it, in a sense, separate from that conversation, but just about a married priest. Does that make you comfortable or uncomfortable? 0345 6060973 is the number. You can text 84850 or tweet at LBC. If you're a man who left the priesthood to marry, I'd love to hear from you on this. Christopher Lamb joins me to talk about it for a few minutes first, Vatican reporter for The Tablet. Good afternoon to you, Christopher.
Good afternoon.
How firm are these reports that this is something that Pope Francis is open to?
Well, I think what we do know is that the Pope is open to the suggestion. And what I think he's saying is, it's not for him to kind of stand up in Rome and say, look, we're going to ordain married men, or we're going to let married priests come back to the priesthood. It's up to the bishops on the ground to say to him, look, we've got a crisis. We can't staff our parishes. We're closing churches. I've got 10 men here who want to be ordained, who are married. Can I do it? Or I've got 10 men who were priests, who were married priests in the past, who could come back. That's a bit more complicated. But anyway, it's up to the people on the ground to say, we want this. And in Brazil, they've got situations where there's, you know, thousands of Catholics who haven't got a priest, and parishes kind of across the Amazonian rainforest who don't see a priest for months on end. And there are people who would come forward to minister as priests, but who can't because of the celibacy rule. So there's a sort of question that some Catholics have asked, is are we kind of sacrificing the priesthood on the altar of celibacy? The Pope, I think, is open to the idea. I mean, the argument against it is that there is something special about the celibate priest, the romantic idea. Anyone who's read Graham Greene's The Power and the Glory we'll get a sense of that with the whiskey priest, who, despite his failings, keeps going as a sort of celibate single priest. But that is not, we're not saying, well, the Pope wouldn't say, let's get rid of the celibate priesthood. It's just allowing some married men to come forward.
Which I'm right in saying, I think, is already the case, in that those Anglican vicars who became Catholic priests as part of what was called the Ordinariate, if they were married, they weren't required to divorce in order to be a Catholic priest. They're still married.
Absolutely. In this country, we've got hundreds of Anglican, former Anglican priests who are now Catholic priests who are married. I mean, the figures suggest about 1 in 10 are in that situation. So there is a feeling that, you know, if it can be done in this situation, why can't it be done for the kind of cradle Catholics? And I mean, you know, it's not just in the UK where the case is. It's in the USA, it's in Australia, it's in former Lutheran married pastors as well. So there is a precedent.
And Christopher, give me a sense of the conversations that you have with priests and bishops. Just give me a sense of the argument against, because there will be those who are horrified by this possibility within the church. What is it about it that horrifies them?
Well, I think the argument against is kind of, one, how do we fund it? You know, if you have married priests with families coming through, that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, there is this ideal of the celibate priest who can give himself 100% to his flock, who can, you know, go out at 3 a.m. to a hospital and give the last rites and be there in a way that a married man can't. So I think that's what's holding them back. And it's just that this ideal of this kind of priesthood as being a kind of total service without getting married. That's, I think, the main block. And also some of the practical financial problems. But I think there are many bishops who feel if it's a question of closing a parish or putting a married man in there to serve it, then they want to go with the latter. And, you know, it's only I think, quite a sort of hardcore few who are saying, you know, it's definitely a no.
And we're already seeing in this country, you know, to keep it, I mean, it is a global church, but with the UK in mind, I noticed myself at Christmas, I was at my childhood church, if you see what I mean, the church that I went, you know, in my parents' parish. And they now have two deacons, male deacons, alongside the priest, who does pretty much everything except a few bits and bobs, just to keep it simple. And it struck me, actually, when I was seeing it, I was just thinking, this is necessity being the mother of invention. And, you know, the necessity is that there are fewer priests and that, you know, there are priests serving three different parishes. And I know that's replicated in Brazil in much bigger numbers, but it's the same problem in a sense. And do you believe that the time is coming where necessity will prove to be the mother of an invention that people just never expected of the Catholic Church, that we'll see women deacons, that we'll see married priests sooner than we perhaps expected in the Catholic Church?
Well, I think absolutely. And, you know, the church is pragmatic as it is dogmatic and needs must. I think you raised the issue of women in the church. I think that's actually more of a fundamental question than the married priest. And the Pope has got a commission looking at whether they can have women deacons, you know, the rung below priesthood. And I think that's a massive issue because, you know, you've got 1 billion Catholics worldwide, half of them are women, but they don't have any official status or any kind of official visibility in the leadership of the church. So I think definitely needs must. I think that's why we're having these conversations, because, you know, while some in the church would like to say, let's keep it as it is, the truth is that the needs on the ground are demanding that these questions have been looked at and debated.
And we talk about the European Catholic Church in crisis. I mean, I don't like to use that word too glibly, but, you know, in terms of numbers and in terms of interest and who's listening to it, it's a very different story in Latin America and in Africa. A more conservative church in Africa wouldn't go for this, would it?
No, it wouldn't. But the truth is, in Africa, celibacy for priests, and you know, I don't mean to sort of be flippant about this, is often honoured in the breach than it is in the observance. I mean, the truth is that there have been situations in Africa where priests who are celibate, but they, you know, they have relationships on the side, and that's the truth. And I think that's the question that the church has to face up to. You know, if they're going to have this rule, is it going to be followed? I mean, we in Northern Europe, we follow the rules, whereas some people say, well, here's the rule, it's an ideal, I'm not necessarily going to follow it. So, yes, you're right, the conservative prelates in Africa would say, no, we must keep this celibacy rule. But they also face up to the fact that often it's not being followed.
And for people listening to our conversation, Christopher, who aren't Catholics or aren't of any faith at all, they must hear this and think, hang on, it's the 21st century. Are we really keeping women out of the church in myriad ways? Are we really stopping them from marrying priests? Are we really stopping them from being priests? It seems so out of kilter with modern life. And yet there's a lot deemed to be precious in it that the church leaders will hold on to, isn't there?
Yes, I mean, look, there is this kind of mystery, there's this, you might say, something, a kind of religion here which seems out of kilter with the 21st century, but there is something powerful that keeps people coming back. I think the church has to balance its traditions with the needs of the modern world, and perhaps what's happened is it's put more focus on traditions than it has on what's going on in reality. And I think the Pope has been very clear that the church can't just kind of seek refuge in traditions. It has to find a way forward that is kind of making sure it stays credible. So I think the credibility and authenticity question is the key one they have to face.
And is you just a brief one, if you would, is your gut instinct that some of the surprises that we've been promised this year from the Pope by those around him, that this could be one of them?
I think there's a strong chance that he could allow this to happen in certain circumstances. Whether it will happen this year, I don't know. But my gut is this Pope is not afraid to take risks. I mean, he obviously has to keep some very angry conservatives in line.
On side.
But the truth is that I think he would take a big step like this if he felt it was necessary.
Thank you, Christopher. Good to talk to you, Christopher Lamb, Vatican reporter for the Tablet. If you're a Catholic listening to this, what do you think of that possibility? Married priests who had left their priesthood to marry, being allowed to come back into it with their wife, with their marriages. Is that the transformation the church that you are part of needs, or do you feel it's a threat to its future, a threat to important traditions? And if you're not a Catholic or a person of any faith, how does this all sound to you? Because when you're inside a faith in one way or another, you hear these things very differently, I think. If you're not a Catholic or not of any faith at all, how does all of this sound to you, the idea that allowing for married priests would be somehow revolutionary within the Catholic Church? How does it sound to you? Do you think as a Catholic that it's a threat to the Church's future or the very thing that will allow it to survive? 0345 6060 973. Love to hear from you if you are a priest. 84850 is the number to text, or you can tweet at LBC. Also coming up, as well as your calls on this, Finland has become the first country to pay its unemployed people a basic wage in order to encourage job seeking. That's the plan. Is it a method that we should all be following? We'll talk about that in 10 minutes or so. The time is 2:16. Brazil may soon be allowed to have married priests. Is this the transformation that the church needs? Should it be rolled out more widely, or is it a threat, do you think, to its traditions, to its future? Nick has called from Croydon. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Sheila.
Do you believe Catholic priests should be allowed to marry?
I absolutely believe that Catholic priests should be allowed to marry. I don't think it's a new idea. It actually goes back to a biblical ideal. St. Peter, who the Catholic Church say is their key man, he was actually married. The Bible talks of Jesus healing his mother-in-law as one of his first miracles. Paul, who's the person who said that if you're not married, you're freer to serve God, actually said twice that bishops should be the husband of one wife. And actually, in a very real way, if you're married as a priest, it means you can relate more to your congregation, because a big part of that role is actually helping them with family life. So it's actually not a new thing, and it's good, and there's really nothing against it that I can see.
Well, I agree with you that I would be more than comfortable with it as a Roman Catholic. But more than that, I would be happy for the priests who wish to do it, that they had the support that marriage can bring. Yeah. But where I would disagree with you, Nick, is I don't believe that a married priest is inherently better able to serve the needs of the people he serves. That to me is down to the gifts of the individual. If a priest is gifted with people and help, you know, and is able to be intuitive with people and listen well and advise well or direct people to the right advice if they need it, I don't think whether he's married or not is an issue. I think that's down to the character of the priest personally. But I agree with you. I think that there should be no bar to it.
I agree. I wouldn't say it's mandatory, but I say that it means that, you know, if you've been in a situation, you're often better able to empathise
because
you've been there, so your perspective would be different. And if you possess those people,
but it's not automatic, is it? You know, I know plenty of married people who've got nothing to offer other people.
No, it's not automatic. As you said, it's a combination of having the gifts that you described, plus the experience, makes for a really powerful combination.
I mean, I feel as a person who does practice her religion, not always brilliantly, but I try. When I compare the priests today to when I was a kid, in numbers, for example, when I was 10 years old, say, there were three priests in our parish, three priests in one parish. Now there's one priest to three parishes. So can you imagine the pressure on that individual man?
That's a lot. I agree.
And I think it's a sad thing as well, because if you, not just for the individual priest, but for the church itself, if you could go into a church knowing that there were plenty of priests, plenty of parishioners, lots of activity, it's not just about numbers and saying, oh, good, the church is doing well. Mm-hmm. It's about the activity of that church, whether it's charity work, whether it's supporting one another, whether it's celebrating together, whatever it is. When that becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, It starts to feel people are doing their best to stop it, but it starts to feel like a hollowed out church, and the more hollowed out it is, the less useful it is.
I think you're touching on something slightly different there, Sheila, in that and it's a really good point, in that the job of looking after a congregation and helping enrich their spiritual life isn't actually the sole responsibility of any one person.
But absolutely.
There are individuals within the congregation who also have gifts and abilities, and the job of a good priest is to actually make sure that, or pastor, is to make sure that those people in the congregation who have those gifts are working as lay members alongside them as well.
Yeah.
It's not a burden on just one person.
Definitely. Nick, thank you. So I agree with Nick. That famous statement from 2015, wasn't it? I agree with Nick. Charles in Tottenham. Hello, Charles.
Yeah, I'm all in favour of this as well, Sheila, to be honest. The only standpoint I have with it, when Nick was saying there about priests being good at various things, I lost my wife about 5 years ago. And at the time when I went back to our parish, the priest, we only had one priest in a rather large parish who had quite a lot on his plate. He's now left and gone to a smaller parish, and we've now got two priests for the price of one. I found with him, trying to talk to him on a spiritual level about loss, he wasn't very good at it. When the two new priests came, I found one who was perfect. And I'm going to put a cat among the pigeons here, Sheila.
Do.
Why don't we let the nuns get married too?
Good Lord. Yeah, why not?
That would stir them up, wouldn't it?
The thing is, though, with nuns, and if you're a nun listening, give us a call. The thing with nuns is that they tend to live in the way that monks would live. They live in community together.
But yes, they do.
Whereas priests tend not to, do they? You know,
no, that's right.
Slightly different.
They live in a house and they kind of cloister themselves in.
They don't cloister. I mean, the nuns, the closed communities do, but most nuns live in very open, socially involved groups. But they have a community that they live in together, a family.
I don't know if you were in a convent. Were you in a convent as a child? Maybe. Might have been a bit different in a convent, isn't it?
I went to a school that was run by nuns, but I wasn't in a convent, no.
Ah, right, that's a bit different.
I go now for a bit of peace and quiet, to be honest, Charles. Thanks very much indeed, Charles in Tottenham. Sean in Kensington, married priests, married Catholic priests.
Hello?
Hello there, Sean. Is it something you would support?
Hello?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me? You're live on the radio.
Hello?
Sean, I don't think, can hear us. Let me read this text that's come in from Cindy. She says, I was Christian, baptised, etc., but I thought the premise of God was he is love, that he loved all. Why do religions follow theory but not practice? So confused, says Cindy. I'm not sure priests not being allowed to marry isn't an unloving thing particularly. I think that's what's... I hope I'm not misinterpreting you, Cindy. I think that's what Cindy is trying to get at. And there is a definite... I think there's a definite strength in a priest who chooses to live the life of a priest and to serve entirely his parish, for that service to be uninterrupted by any other concerns. But the reality is that priests always, they're just people. They have families, even if they don't have a wife. They have families and they have family concerns as well. It's a different responsibility, but it's still a family concern. So I don't think it's too much of an added extension for a priest to be married and still be able to serve well. I mean, Anglican vicars do it, and Anglican vicars' wives do it as well. And I suspect if a woman were to marry a Catholic priest and be part of that parish, it would be a particular kind of woman, I think, who would want to do that. But I think it's really interesting for those who don't have a religion. I'd love to hear from you as to how you hear this. Do you think it sounds just completely outdated, the idea that to do a job well, you need not to be married? Does that sound completely outdated to you? 0345 6060973 is the number. You can text 84850 or tweet at LBC. I'm sorry we lost that last caller, but I don't think he could hear us at all. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the possibility, it's just reports, that the Pope Francis might soon allow Brazilian bishops to allow married priests to serve their communities again. So men who have been priests and who left in order to marry, to be allowed to come back and serve as priests. And it is partly a pragmatic move, if it comes at all, because Brazil, the numbers are high in Brazil because of the sheer size of the population, but the situation exists here as well, I think, just different numbers, different statistics. A population of 140 million Catholics in Brazil needs, on average, 100,000 priests to serve it, but it only has 1,800, so fewer than 2,000 priests. And churches like the Pentecostal churches are doing incredibly well in countries like Brazil, in Latin America as a whole, and it's something that the Pope himself has talked about. They're doing brilliantly because married men can serve as priests, as pastors, and serve their communities and still be married. So clearly you can see that young men who might have once joined the Catholic Church might look to Pentecostal churches instead. Now, similar things are happening in this country. There's a different tone to each country, obviously. But I wonder why there is still this sense of discomfort at the idea of Catholic priests being allowed to marry. The idea that if you throw a woman into the mix in the parish, something will go wrong, something will be lost. I think the opposite is true. Clearly, it shouldn't be compulsory, but I don't think it should be compulsory either way. And if Brazil does have married priests, would you welcome that being something that spreads slowly or quickly around the rest of the world, perhaps especially Europe, where the churches are starting to falter in numbers of priests and parishioners? 0345 6060973. Would married priests be the transformation that the church needs? 84850 is the number to text, and you can tweet as well at LBC. More of your calls on this, and we'll talk about Finland becoming the first country to pay its unemployed people a basic wage. That's all coming up here on LBC. The time is 2:30. Let's get the headlines from Rupert Bhatia. I get back to your calls on the possibility of married Catholic priests in a few minutes. Before that, though, let's talk about something Finland has done. It's become the first country in Europe to pay its unemployed citizens a basic monthly income. It amounts to around 560,000. €560 in a social experiment, really, that it's hoped will reduce government red tape, reduce poverty and boost employment. It started on the 1st of January. 2,000 randomly picked citizens, unemployed citizens, receiving this new salary instead of their unemployment benefits. They'll receive it every month. No reporting requirements of how they spend it at all. And the amount will be deducted from any benefits they already receive. But is it a good idea? John Rentall is here to talk about this with me for a few minutes, the chief political commentator for The Independent. Hello, John.
Hello, Sheila.
Do you believe this has any merit?
Well, it's a lovely idea, but I'm afraid it's hopelessly impractical. I mean, what they're trying in Finland is not really a citizen's income. I mean, as you said, they're just selecting 2,000 unemployed people at random and giving them a fixed sum per month for 2 years, which will be unconditional. So the idea is to find out whether that encourages people to take jobs that they wouldn't otherwise do. And that'll be an interesting experiment. It's basically an experiment to do with slightly higher unemployment pay and making it unconditional so that when you get work, you don't lose your benefits, which is obviously one of the advantages of a universal citizen's income.
Do you think it feels a little bit like almost a, you know, an attempt at an income to see what that achieves before they bring in a universal?
Well, yes, basic, I mean, that's what people always say. I mean, they say, you know, that a basic income has never been tried, and you know, we need to sort of do pilot schemes to test whether it'll work. But I mean, unfortunately, you know, such a limited scheme as this isn't really going to tell you whether a basic income is going to work, because the problem with a basic income is that it's just fantastically expensive, because obviously you're going to be paying money to all citizens by virtue of their citizenship. And that means a lot of people who you know, don't get money from the state at the moment are going to get money from the state or more money from the state, and that's going to be extremely expensive, and someone's going to have to pay for it.
And we've got local authorities in this country having a look, aren't we? And by this country, I mean the UK, Glasgow City Council.
Yes, Glasgow and Fife Council have both said they're interested. But I mean, you know, this idea has been around since Thomas More in the 1500s. I mean, if it worked, I think someone would have demonstrated it by now, to be honest.
What do you think the dangers of it are?
Well, I don't think it's got dangers. I mean, I think it's a lovely idea, but it is just fantastically expensive. And if you ask people how they would pay for it, they tend not to sort of come up with answers. They just tend to talk about how the world of work is changing and how it would lead to a much better society because people would be able to take part-time jobs or temporary jobs without having to lose their benefits, which is incidentally one of the aims of the universal credit reforms which Ian Duncan Smith introduced, and which are not yet fully rolled out. I mean, so
well, far from it, yeah.
Universal credit is a very ambitious scheme, but it falls far, far short of a basic income. And even that has turned out to be incredibly difficult and controversial. And it's still, you know, 7 years after it was launched, it's still a long way from being rolled out.
The reason I asked about the dangers is it seems to me that one of the dangers of it is actually moral. I don't mean in a finger-wagging way. I mean that, you know, if you get money just for being,
yes,
why do anything?
Well, yes, but I don't want to get involved in those sort of moral arguments. I just want to stick with the practical questions, because I don't want to...
You're on a phone-in programme, John Rentall. What's wrong with you?
Well, because...
I understand.
You know, I don't think that's the argument against it, actually, because, you know, you could have the same argument against giving people unemployment benefit. I mean, I think, you know, we do have Social Security in this country, and I think, you know, most people accept that in a civilised country, you can't let people starve to death. The question is, how generous should it be and on what conditions? And the problem with a basic income is you're giving a very generous amount of money to people with no strings attached at all. Now, obviously, that has huge attractions of simplicity, administrative simplicity, but actually getting rid of all the benefits we've got, you know, like housing benefit and disability benefit, is going to prove very difficult and complicated. And in the end, all you're going to be doing if you try to introduce a basic income is you're going to be trying to reform the existing system and doing it in a patchwork way.
You wrote an interesting piece over the weekend, which is why I rang you today to invite you on the programme. Tell me a little bit about robots. How might they change the world of work and mean that we need to work less so basic incomes might become more the
norm? Well, this is what I call the Luddite argument. I mean, there are two arguments for a basic income. One is the sort of John Lennon imagine type argument, that it'd be lovely if everybody could, you know, just all sort of get together and, you know, get a basic income from the community, and then they could work if they felt like it and not if they didn't. I mean, that's That's the John Lennon argument. Then the Elon Musk argument, that billionaire chap who makes electric cars in America, he says, you know, automation is going to put everybody out of work, and therefore, you know, we won't have any money, we won't have any earnings, because all the jobs will have gone. So the state will have to give us some money. Where the state's going to get the money from, I don't know. But, you know, leave all that to one side. I mean, that is the other argument for it, is that robots are going to take our jobs, and therefore the state will have to pay us. I mean, that is just pure Luddism. I mean, the idea that technological progress means that we won't, you know, we'll all be put out of work is what they smashed up the spinning jennies for in the 17th century? 18th?
Yeah,
18th?
And
19th.
18th. Industrial revolution. Do you believe that actually a better focus than looking on at ideas of a basic income, our time would be better served by just really tackling the complexity of the benefits system more than we already have?
Well, yes. I mean, that's in the end, although I think the basic income is a lovely idea, you asked me what the danger is. The danger is that it's a huge distraction from actually dealing with the real problems of the social security system, which are that we've got tax credits cuts that are coming down the line over the next few years that are actually going to cause real hardship for working people who are in work and claiming tax credits. Those, you know, Philip Hammond confirmed that those cuts are going to go ahead in the autumn statement. And if people just devoted a fraction of their energy that they currently devote to these pie in the sky schemes for sort of utopia to actually dealing with what's actually coming up in the next couple of years, I think that would be better for everybody.
John, good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. John Rentall, Chief Political Commentator for The Independent. Sean has called from Kensington to carry on our conversation about the possibility that the Pope will allow married priests in Brazil, if that were broadened out to the rest of the world and to Europe, where we live. Is that something you would welcome, married Catholic priests? Sean, you want to make a very interesting point that I hadn't thought of, which is that this already happens in the Orthodox Church.
Well, the Orthodox Church, but also the Catholic Eastern churches in union with the Pope, such as the Maronite Church or the Greek Catholic Church. So there's nothing new. And the usual system seems to be that they can marry first, and then become priests. But if they become priests first, then they can't marry.
That's in the Eastern Catholic Church you're talking about there.
Yes, the Eastern Catholic Church, and like in the Orthodox Church, the Greek and Russian Orthodox churches, a man can be married and then become a priest. But if he becomes a priest first, he then can't become married. And the bishops are usually chosen, I gather, from the unmarried priests.
But the suggestion here in Brazil is that it will be priests who have left in order to marry will be allowed to come back into their priesthood.
Well, that'd be rather like the Anglican clergy and the ordinariate in this country and other countries, where married Anglican clergy becoming Catholic priests have been allowed to remain as normal married men. So, and again, nothing new, and that seems to be working quite well.
Yeah, and become bishops in at least one case that I'm aware of and be married, yes. So is it inevitable that once that was allowed in the UK, that it will slowly develop into something more than that, that it's not just ex-Anglicans?
Well, it's difficult to say at this stage. At the moment, there's no pressing need for that, but you never know, it might come. I think over the years, over the centuries, in the earlier centuries, Catholic priests in the Europe, in the West, could be married. But then the bishop soon found that a married priest was perhaps less committed, less available to be moved to a place that needed him. An unmarried priest could be easily moved to a remote place where there's only a small hut for him to live. But if he had a wife and children, that wasn't suitable for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a theological argument, though, is it? It's a valid one, and it's part of the picture, I'm sure. But it's not a theological argument against it, is it? Carl, thank you, Sean. Carl has called from Purley. Carl, hello.
Hello there, Sheila. You took the wind out of my sails when I heard you agree with this.
Why? You didn't think I would?
Well, no, because I'm always impressed at the way you keep your religion going, and I always like listening to you when you talk about going to church every week.
I don't go every week. I'm very bad.
No, but you know when you're still a good Catholic. You know.
Have you gone off me now? Because I think priests should be allowed to marry.
Not at all. I was brought up a Catholic a few years before you, probably. But I think this is another nail in the coffin for the Roman Catholic Church. I don't often get in the pulpit about these things, but to me, this is all political. This, because you know the last Pope Benedict, he's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, when have you, in our lifetime, have you ever known a Pope that's gone off ill and another one's taken over?
No, clearly. I mean, that was an extraordinary moment, yeah.
Yeah, but the reason was, if you look back in time, he was a real hardliner, wasn't he, Benedict? He was a real hardliner. And as far as I know, he threatened all those South American priests, not just Brazil. He told them all that if they got caught married or living with females, he was going to defrock the whole lot of them. That would have dropped South America straight out, wouldn't it, out of the Catholic Church?
Well, it's already got a problem of numbers, as
yeah,
oh, I'm as Europe has as well.
Problem. I'm not saying there's not a problem, but to me, every time something like this happens, I lose a bit more of what I call my old faith. You know, I'm down to about 20%, 10% now of what I was brought up on.
So what was your, so you oppose them being married? What you'd prefer, what, women priests than married priests?
I'd prefer women priests and male priests, but they've got to stick to the old.
Keep them single.
Yeah.
All right, Carl. Thank you. Carl feels only down to 10% of his faith, he says, but he feels strongly about that one. Thank you, Carl, in Purley. Keep your calls coming on this question of whether, if Brazil is allowed to have married Catholic priests, is that a transformation that might spread in the Catholic Church? And is it one that it needs? 0345 606 0973 is the number. You can text 84850 or tweet at LBC. The time is 2:46. Let's get the LBC travel news now with Joe. Most of you who are calling and texting and tweeting on this question of married Catholic priests, most of you are supportive of it. Not all, but most of you are. Andrew Brown joins me now, a Guardian journalist and expert on church affairs. This whole question of Catholic married priests, Andrew, it's a complex one, isn't it? Because they already exist in the Eastern Catholic Church. They already exist because of the Anglican Ordinariate in this country. Do you believe that we're about to see a real fundamental change from the top here, from the Vatican, on this issue of Catholic priests marrying?
I don't know. I think that it's inevitable. Whether it happens this year is partly a judgment about how strong the resistance to Pope Francis from conservatives is at the moment, and we don't know how strong that is. They're already fighting a tremendous battle over a softening on the line of the line on divorce and remarriage. Now, married priests are officially a much easier, smaller reform, but in practice, it would be a huge reform. Because when you have married priests, you get, for example, divorced priests after a while. That's happened in America already. And this is something which would produce huge complications.
Of course, yeah. How many American, and I don't mean literally the figure, but when you say there are American married priests, who are they and how did that come about?
Well, again, it's very similar to the Ordinariate in this country. There were Anglican priests, American Anglican priests, who petitioned to join the Catholic Church as priests, although they were married, and this was allowed.
Right.
One thing that we have to be clear about here is that there are two possible reforms. The one that gets the lobby groups excited within the Catholic Church is to allow people already ordained or who have already been priests to get married, or possibly to readmit some of those who were priests, left to get married, but would still like to go on being priests. Mm. Now, that is actually a much more complicated and controversial suggestion than the more moderate one, which is to allow married men of good character, as the Latins puts it, to become priests, which is again what happens in the Orthodox Church. You can get married and then become a priest. But if you were suddenly to relax the discipline and suddenly say, it's okay, I know when you were ordained, you signed up to be celibate, but now we're
the rules have changed,
when you can get married, That would form an enormous convulsion. There are considerable economic problems because a single celibate priest is an awful lot cheaper to support than a priest with a wife and family.
Mm. And isn't the reality... No,
Sheila, go on, because what I was going to say was reasonably tasteless.
Feel free. Go on.
Well, I mean, the other problem is, of course, that in the poor world, the celibacy rule is largely disregarded. I mean, large numbers of priests have, in effect, wives, unofficial families, children, all the rest of it, in lots of Africa and lots of Latin America already. I mean, this is one of the problems. But in the rich world, and especially in the USA, what the celibacy rule means is that an enormous number of priests are gay. Everybody knows this, and officially, well, it's all right if they don't do anything and if it's not a major part of their lives. But actually, of course, if you were to introduce into this a large element of married priests, it would cause a very great deal of disruption. And you have to remember that when women priests were allowed in the Church of England, some of the very strongest resistance came from celibate or at least unmarried male gay priests. There is, you can see that there would be tremendous problems, even if nobody can say this out loud.
Are you saying that the gay priests would wish to marry too?
No. I don't think they would, actually. I'm saying that they would resist. They would resist married priests, because you can imagine a situation. Suppose a married priesthood became normal. At this point, priests who are unmarried, for one reason or another, will be presumed to be unmarried because they don't want to get married.
Which is fair enough.
At the moment, well, I know, but the assumption would be that this is because they're gay, whereas at the moment, so long as everybody has to be unmarried, you can't look at these people and say, oh, he's like that.
Well, I'm not married, but people don't routinely presume that's because I'm gay. This has gone off at an interesting tangent, but I mean, the reality is that if priests routinely are allowed to marry, you can bet your bottom dollar that their parishioners won't suddenly go, oh, thank goodness he's straight. And nor will they go, oh, he's not married, he must be gay. They'll probably know either way already anyway.
Of course they know already, yes. It's not so much the parishioners, it's within the priesthood, and it's the psychological.
But to finish on the psychological aspect of it, actually, whatever the Pope decides on Brazil, if it were to broaden out into Europe as well, he knows that it would be not just to Catholics, it would be a real sort of headline change, wouldn't it? It would be interpreted as such.
Well, I'm not sure about this. I mean, because when it happened in England, I mean, the Ordinariate has actually been, and it's worth remembering this, a tremendous failure.
In what way?
These people came over, but very few of their parishes flourished. Very, very few. I mean, the promise, as it were, was that they would bring lots of laity with them, and they didn't. I think if you look at the figures, on average, each priest was followed by either 5 or at most 10 members of their congregation. They are, as I was saying earlier, much more expensive than celibate priests.
Andrew, thank you. Good to talk to you. Andrew Brown, Guardian journalist, expert on church affairs as well. You've been texting and tweeting on this subject too. The rules are being changed, says Rob, in order that an irrelevant and discredited Catholic Church hierarchy can maintain power. I'm not quite sure how you came to that conclusion, but thank you anyway for your observation, Rob. Felicity, sorry we didn't have time to get to you. Felicity thinks a lot of people don't become priests simply because they want to have the option to marry if they wish. Thank you very much for all of your contributions this hour. That was really interesting. I want to talk about sugar this hour. Now, children, we're being told by Public Health England, are having half of their recommended daily intake of sugar before they've even left the house for school. And by the end of the day, when you're tucking them in at bedtime, they will have had 3 times their recommended daily allowance of sugar. It's a drug, people. It's doing you no good. when taken in large amounts. Are you listening as a parent to Public Health England? Hello, good afternoon to you. 0345 606 0973 is the number to call because we need to talk about sugar. 84850 is the number to text, and you can tweet at